Blog Talk Radio.
The studios are teeing it up in the swamps of Jersey. This is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling for a Tuesday, September 27th, the year 2016. We welcome in our great friend, the one, the only, Mr. Jordan Brickman. Hello, sir.
Hey, Jeremy. How you doing?
I'm good. Glad to have you back on the show. So the reason why Jordan's here is because we have failed to talk baseball during his last appearance a couple weeks ago. Had a great chat about rap and had a great chat about basketball, but did not get to baseball. And,
right. You
know, weird things happen in sports. I think that's partly why we love sports, is that weird, funky things happen. And
right. The
Mets, you know, the Mets came into the season with quite possibly the greatest pitching rotation in modern-day baseball on paper.
Yeah,
and sadly for you guys, on paper means on paper, because except for Bartolo Colon, this has been just insane rash of injuries, and now today Steven Matz has decided to undergo season-ending surgery to get bone spurs out of his elbow. What must be going through your head?
You know, like you say, it's the rotation is the best on paper, but it seems like these guys are made of paper at this point. You know, they're getting hurt left and right. I mean, that's the thing with pitchers, is that it's such an unnatural motion, and you never know. And I remember thinking during the World Series last year about, you know, with Matt Harvey and should be shut down and all that conversation, that, you know, you have to go for it, because you never know if we're going to have a rotation, including Wheeler, with all five of these guys healthy, because pitchers are just injury prone as almost like an NFL player. Like, they're guaranteed. One of them or two, a couple of them are guaranteed to get hurt every year. So it's just tough. It's just kind of typical Mets luck. You know, last year they had their run, and now they're holding on to their last hope in Syndergaard. And obviously Colon's been, at 43, the only healthy one, but it's tough to rely on him, you know, through the playoffs with his kind of junk stuff that he throws up there. So, not very confident, but hopeful that at least they can get in and maybe win the wild card game and, you know, chalk it up once they get probably pretty crushed by the Cubs.
As I said in the open, you love music. And, you know, there's guys that have reputations in that genre of life that are false and that are real. And the Mets doctors have a reputation of not somehow messing up players, which is obviously not true. But you know, Mets doctors and Mets health luck has not been great. Are you one of them who believes that the Mets is like, I don't know, change the location of their doctor's office and their clubhouse or something to change
their
luck?
Well, they fired I think it was their strength and conditioning coach the minors, I believe it was, that they fired. So clearly they think something's wrong. They're professionals. They know what they're doing. It's just sometimes there's nothing you can do. But like you look at compare Strasburg and Harvey. You know Strasburg gets shut down, gets hurt anyway. Harvey pitches through it, gets hurt. So it's kind of a lose-lose situation. I find it hard to blame the doctors. I mean, they're at the end of the day, they're trained professionals. I think they're doing what they think is best. You look at like something like the Suns to kind of look at a different perspective. The Suns apparently have, in the NBA, they have one of the best training staffs, and they get kind of the most out of players. But to compare that to baseball or pitchers in particular, you can't. At the end of the day, these guys are going to get hurt. They're throwing the ball in unnatural motion, 99 miles an hour, 95 miles an hour, 100 times a game, you know, once or twice a week. These guys are just going to get hurt, especially when you factor in curveballs and breaking pitches and all these other types of pitches you guys are throwing nowadays. It's just going to get hurt. You know, I find it hard to blame the medical staff if they feel like they need to get just a change of scenery in there, maybe try some different workouts. That's fine. But it's hard. I think it's hard to blame some of these guys for these injuries, because they happen across the sport, like for all teams. So it's hard to just kind of pinpoint it on that, I think.
Yeah, and two offshoots of that. Number one, I said to people, and possibly to you off the air, I said last year, if I was the Mets, I would not pitch some of these guys until May or June. I would literally give them a very long off season. what was A, your take on that, and B, do you think that they brought these starters who worked so many innings last year back too quickly this spring?
Well, I mean, it's tough, right? Because we're going to sit four of your five starters, you know, for the first month of the season, and then just tank the whole first month. And then you look at it from that, from, and let's say they did that, right? So that April was the only month that they've had a healthy offense till recently. So then you're wasting. So then you, let's say that happened and everything else stays the same. You get to May and there's no David Wright, there's no Lucas Duda, Darno gets hurt again. All of a sudden, you know, of an offense, and you're behind the eight ball, and you've won five games in April. And now these guys are starting spring training and they're ramping up, and you know, now you need them, and now they're going to start pressing. And then, you know, it's all hindsight's 2020, obviously, with some of these guys, but a lot of them didn't have injuries last year. They just were overworked. You know, it's just the nature of going on a long postseason run. I mean, maybe one or two of them you slow down, but I can't. I think it's just a game that you play. Their guys are going to get hurt. It's just the nature of the business. There are measures you can take, but sitting them for a month, and let's say you sat them for a month, let's say the Mets lose, you know, five or six more games than they did before, and now you're looking where we are. Look where we are in September, where, you know, half game up with a wild card. A couple of those games could be the whole difference in the season. So I think that you gotta, you know, maybe they had a slower ramp a little bit in spring training, but sitting them for a month in the season, I think is not the way to go.
Yeah, and then the second part of this, and obviously you're somebody that cares about your fitness. The whole biomechanics and rest and sleep and kind of next level, next generation stats when it comes to your body is the next wave in all these things. And I'm just curious, as someone who cares about your fitness and is a very active a person, have you bought into some of what professional teams are doing? Because obviously the Suns have paid extremely close attention to this and have used it, you know, for their players, you know, on a just, you know, a regular guy basis. Have you bought into some of this stuff?
I don't do anything, you know, I don't have those chambers that they put on their legs to, like, massage them and keep them heated after games. I don't do anything extra, like, that's super, you know, 2016 technology-wise, but you know, just kind of have your protein shakes. They say they're realizing how much rest is so important now for recovery. So try to get my sleep in and just hydrate and that type of thing. But nothing crazy. I know that, like, Syndergaard, for example, after his starts, he always has the juice because apparently it helps with the inflammation and things like that. But you're also talking to a guy who has a cast on his wrist right now because I injured it arm wrestling somebody 20 days ago. So I guess I'm not, you know, while I am active, I also get injured from time to time. So maybe I should start to pay attention to some of the things that they're doing.
Yeah, totally hear you there. We're talking to Jordan Brickman here on Teeing It Up. Now, with all that being said, the crazy part about this is that coming into tonight, the Mets are 83-74 and have a half-game lead on the first wild card position. How in the world is this happening?
So a lot of people hate on Terry Collins, and he definitely made some mistakes in the postseason, but you got to tip your hat to the guys. Second year in a row, he had kind of a makeshift team for the main months of the season, you know, during the dog days of summer. And then by the end of August and September, his team's playing well, and they're in the position to make the postseason. At this point, you got to give credit to, obviously, to Terry. Like I said, you got to give credit to the AAA team, Frank Viola, the pitching staff, pitching manager down there, for teaching some of these guys like Gisellman and Lugo and even Yanoa and some of these other guys that have come up and are getting outs. And I understand they're facing the Phillies and teams that aren't that good, but they're still major league players. And also the offense has been legit. Azubel Cabrera has been great. Jose Reyes has been a huge spark at third base and top of the lineup. Granderson's power has come back. Cespedes has been one of the most way more consistent than I ever could have expected him to be this whole season. And now Duda's back and he's starting to get some hits. So, and even Conforto's contributing from time to time. And even second base, TJ Rivera coming out of nowhere pretty much. This guy was undrafted. He had like 340 in AAA this year. They stick him in there with Flores' injury and Walker out, and he's hitting. So the offense, it's funny because coming into the season, obviously the pitching was the sharp point. The offense was decent. Now the offense is a strong point. The pitching is, let's say, below average. So it's really kind of flip-flopped as far as what their strengths are. But it's kind of a combination. It's been a team effort, which is all you can really ask for when all these injuries strike. And, you know, their rotation doesn't look great, but they're in a position now to maybe get a home game in the wild card and hopefully advance to get a rematch against the Cubs.
And for me, this is all with Jay Bruce, who you guys thought would be the big midseason power acquisition, having gone completely ice cold.
Yeah, I think I saw a stat that since he made his debut with the Mets, there's like 185 players with as many plate appearances as he has, and he ranks 183rd worst or something like that. He's just been one of the worst players in baseball since he's been on the Mets. I feel bad for the guy. That, I mean, he's kind of like Lucas Duda in the sense that he's extremely hot or extremely cold. It just so happens he got here and is very cold now. He's shown some signs recently. I kind of hold on that whenever he makes contact into the ball fair, I think that it's a sign. So I'm hoping he starts to turn around just for his sake. But that's a good point. I mean, if him or Conforto, either of these guys, can be consistent, that's just another power bat that can stick in there. And the offense can, you know, you see what they did this weekend against the Phillies. They can mash. So, and you know, against the right pitching staff, they struggle against lefties like they face a Kershaw or Bumgarner or Lester. But against the righty, they can definitely do some damage.
And the thing that also stands out to me, and is such a testament to Terry Collins, is that he had that fit about, what, a month ago, I think it was? He had that fit, and he just, you know, ranted and maybe said some curse words or whatever it was. He has somehow kept these guys believing with their heads up, where I think a lot of managers would just be like, oh, my God, it's another injury. He's kept them going in a positive direction, and even if you don't get very far in the playoffs, at least you've given the fans reason to tune in every night.
Absolutely. I mean, that's kind of what I was saying, was that, you know, injury, and not only just injuries, but key guys going down, you know, just the rotation, obviously the entire rotation has had injury problems, even like when Wright went down and Cespedes is battling injuries and Cabrera's been fighting through his knee injury. You got to tip your hat to Terry Collins. I think, you know, people definitely hate on him a little bit for some of his game management. And again, people kind of can't get over some of the World Series mistakes he made last year. But you got to tip your hat to be able to keep the team chugging along and have them in the position where they are right now.
Yeah. All right. So before we look at the baseball picture at large, I think we have to touch on last night. That was, with Jose Fernandez tribute, one of the most emotional things I've seen in baseball in a long time, and for D. Gordon to do what he did was just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, there's like almost no words for it, you know. Obviously, it's a terrible tragedy for Jose to go. He legitimately was a superstar in the sport, and the whole game, really, not even just the moments, but the Mets as well, kind of. Everyone became one, if you will, that last night before the game, and kind of shared a moment. And D. Gordon was around the bases with tears in his eyes. Darno said he was crying too. It was just kind of that out of body experience for those players, and it was pretty surreal to watch on TV. And it just made sense that they were going to kind of hop out, and you know, it's a 7-0 start in the first like three innings against Bartolo, and you know, they had some help, I guess, last night, as some people were saying. They had like someone else with them and on the field, and you know, they were playing kind of out of their minds, and you know, they deserved that win, and I kind of didn't mind it at all, despite being in a pennant race. Obviously, the Cardinals losing didn't hurt, so that was good. But they deserved that win, and it was a pretty amazing moment.
All right, so let's flip forward. A, do you think they make the wild card game, and B, you kind of hinted at it, but I don't think you see this team getting too far, do you?
No, I mean, I just can't. If they were playing the Nationals are really beat up right now. Murphy and Harper are injuries, Strasburg, and Wilson Ramos, I think, is out for the season now. So if they were playing the Nationals, I think they'd have a shot. But the Cubs, I think the Cubs in general are the World Series favorites. They're so good all around, bullpen rotation. Offense is amazing. I can't see – maybe Syndergaard get the game. You kind of look at it how the Dodgers looked at things last year, where you hope that Syndergaard gets game one and game five and you win something in the middle. You know, kind of how they picture things with Kershaw. But I think that Bartolo stuff is going to get shelled by the Cubs, and then Gisellman and Lugo, I mean, they've looked good, but I can't imagine they're going to shut down the best offense in the NL, one of the best in baseball, especially if they have to go to Wrigley for that. So, and also, Syndergaard might not even be starting game one because, you know, who depends on how the wild card shakes out. Syndergaard might be starting Sunday or the wild card game. Schedule's all up in the air right now, so that's really your only hope is Syndergaard wins game one and game five, and you get lucky and win one of the first, you know, some of the middle games. But I think that their rotation is going to get shelled and they're just going to run out of it by the end. But I think right now, my perspective, if they can get in, if they can win the wild card game, if they can win one or two games in LDS, I'll be happy.
Yeah, talking to Jordan Brickman here about baseball. Jordan, there is a thought process out there that, yeah, we've had to deal with Donald Trump, but the trade-off for that is Steph Curry going crazy, the Cavs winning, Kobe's goodbye, Peyton's goodbye, and the Cubs finally win the World Series. So are you somebody that thinks this is the Cubs' year to finally break that curse, just the way 2016 in sports has kind of been going?
Yes, I do. I told my friend that about 6 weeks ago, I was just looking at the Cubs, and I watched like a game they played, and I came to grips. This is the year for them. So the AL is legit. There's a lot of really good teams in the AL. The Rangers and Indians and Red Sox are all really good. So I think they're going to be tough on each other, but the Cubs are just going to, I think, run through the NL, and they're going to be just ready and raring to go to take out the team in the AL. They're just so stacked at every position, and their rotation is, you know, long. Like last year they ran out of steam a little bit. Arrieta ran out of steam a little bit, and they kind of rode him to get to the playoffs this year. They're so much deeper. That bullpen is legit. They're in great shape. And, you know, they're the best manager in baseball. They just have everything on their side to win the championship this year, finally.
And then, you know, mutual friend Nick, you know, being a diehard Red Sox fan as he is, he's convinced, well, not convinced, but he's hoping, and I think Major League Baseball is hoping that this winds up being a Cubs-Red Sox World Series, which would just have so many interesting subplots between Big Poppy and the Cubs curse and all of this. I mean, that would just be crazy.
Yes, and two of the biggest markets, too, in baseball, and two of the craziest fans. That'd be a lot of fun. That's must-watch baseball right there.
So, to put you on the record, September 27th, 2016, you believe this is a Cubs World Series title?
Yeah, I think they win this year. And obviously, the Mets, they're going to have to go through the Mets or, you know, whoever wins the wild card game, but I can't see them stopping them. So it pains me to say it a little bit, but I like the Cubs. I think that they're the team this year.
That city will go nuts if they win the title.
I went to a game there this year. It was a regular season game against the Rangers, and they were going nuts just winning that game. So I can't imagine what it would be like if they won the World Series.
By the way, as someone who has now been there since they installed all the new scoreboards and stuff, does it fit? Does it look right? You know, as you sit there in such an old ballpark, and I was there in 2007, when you sit there, does it, you know, feel right?
So I wasn't there before. It was the first time I was there, so it's hard for me to compare to what it was when it was, you know, before the new scoreboard. It looks fine. The whole stadium obviously is pretty out of date, so kind of I didn't even really notice that it was like a fresh scoreboard, to be honest, just because everything else is so kind of ancient. I didn't even notice that it was that it didn't like stick out as like a new, something new and kind of high tech.
All right, so the second thing I want to talk to you about is since the last time you're on, we talked a lot about culture and how music and sports and culture all kind of blend together. We've got this controversy right now with the national anthem, and as NBA training camps open up, you're starting to, you know, have reporters ask various star players questions about how they will choose to treat the national anthem and if they can start a discourse and a conversation of some kind that, you know, tries to improve community relations with police in a non-controversial way, which appears to be the problem right now, is that the big question is being lost in what Collins done and so many of these other guys have done. What's your take on what NBA guys, especially who are, I think, as a part of culture and especially as much part of branded culture as maybe any athletes in all of sports. What's your take on what they will do to try to further the conversation in a positive way and not have this be an off-the-court distraction every time a game is played?
Yeah, well, there's like I said, there's definitely a lot of conversation about it. I know Popovich spoke about it yesterday, and I heard that Melo reached out to Colin Kaepernick, and they're going to discuss it. It sounds like, you know, some teams are going to do something. I think what I would look for, unlike the NFL, is entire teams are going to be doing something. So NFL, obviously, specific players or specific groups of players are doing kneeling or fists up or whatever it might be. I think that you're going to see a whole team of people, the whole entire, all 15 of them, maybe even including the managers, doing some type of protest, if you will, whether that be, you know, fists in the air or jersey or warm-ups backwards or something like that. I think that you're going to see that in the NBA. Everyone's going to be much more united, which will be a lot more of a powerful message, I think. And everyone's going to be doing the same thing on that team. I mean, it'd be awesome if they went through to the managers, but I think for the players, you'll see them doing, you know, something united and together. And that's kind of the whole purpose of the protest, is that, you know, we're all together, we're all united. So you'll see black, white, European, you know, if you're in the Nets, you'll have Jeremy Lin, the token Asian, pretty much in the NBA, you know, doing the same thing, which hopefully will be a more powerful sentiment.
And, you know, what's interesting to me, too, is that the NBA as a sport and as an organization is not afraid to talk about hot-button culture issues. You saw that with the gun control ad, which aired either during the All-Star game or the finals. I can't think of it offhand.
Yeah, well, there was that, and there was also the North Carolina law that was passed in Charlotte.
Yeah.
You know, and they moved the All-Star game.
And for me, and what's interesting about it in that context is that for a progressive league like that, I think the reaction from the league office may have more impact than in most other sports, because I believe that as long as the league says, don't spark some kind of major, you know, horrible controversy, but just do something. If you want to be provocative, do it, but just be tasteful about it and further the conversation. I think the fact that they may let that happen and make it be pervasive, especially over the first month, could actually have a much bigger effect in terms of furthering this overall conversation than if this became a nightly issue about, you know, what will the league office do, you know, because some team did X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they definitely, you know, are kind of on top of it and are pushing the issue. I agree with your earlier point that culturally the NBA and basketball in general really has maybe the biggest impact compared to other sports. The only one close would be football, but I think basketball as a sport has just the biggest impact culture. So it's great to see that they are, you know, really pushing the envelope and willing to discuss these kind of hot topics. And Adam Silver's done a great job, I think, since he's taken over, and he's kind of, you know, it all starts with your leader, and he's kind of started those conversations as well. So it's great to see that the NBA is really embracing that part of the culture.
Yeah, no, totally. So now that you've sat here, and since we last talked about this, and have had some time to further digest it, do you think the Warriors will work? And I asked you the exact same question last time you were on, but now that we're closer to the season and some of the fierce emotion of what happened over the summer has died down for the moment, do you think the Warriors will work now that they're in camp and can actually get all this stuff straightened out?
Yeah, for sure. There's no question in my mind. I mean, also three of the guys played together on the Olympic team with KD, Clay, and Draymond Green, so they got a little more familiar with themselves and playing together. So then it's just about bringing Steph in. I can't see this not – well, so let me ask you this. Is not working mean they lose in the finals in seven games? Does that mean they didn't work?
I mean, if that happens, then that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. My point is if, you know, the flow isn't right, the whole defensive sets aren't right, if there's controversy, if people aren't unhappy. There's one thing if you lose an NBA Finals in seven games. It's a completely different story if you are – a completely dysfunctional team for the whole season, trying to get their act together just seems to be a complete hardship.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll see the first 20 games of the year maybe a little slower than last year, which, you know, pretty much impossible not to be. But I think there'll be some growing pains. But and they're just so much better than everyone else that they're going to work through it. I mean, I know that 2K, obviously the video game, is not the same thing as their life, of course, the video game. But I have the new one. I've been playing them a couple times. They're just literally unguardable. It's just you can't. There's nothing you can do to stop them because someone is open and someone is a knockdown shooter or just a good scorer. I'm talking about like Draymond or one of those guys. They're just so good that it's going to be so easy for them. It's going to be rare for them to even be tested. I think I said in the podcast last time that we won't really know until the playoffs come and they start and they lose a game or two in the first few games. But I think it's going to be so easy for them and they're just going to be so much more lethal with all these different options.
I know that the 2K guys said that they needed to recode the game because Steph Curry was hitting shots from so far away. Have they finally made those changes?
It's still, I mean, he still hits his layups. People were getting mad because his layup package is ridiculous because all of his layups that he shoots are crazy underhand floaters that he has. He does those in real life as well, but in the game they're like exaggerated and it's like impossible to block him. So just him alone is really hard. And then you add Durant and Clay and all these other guys. They're very, very impressive.
It is so rare in sports that a video game has to be recalibrated because of the talent of a single player. But that's what happened with Steph Curry. Final thing, Jordan, where will J.R. Smith end up? For some reason, he's been, you know, he got married. He's been having a fantastic time in the off season. He's been working out with the Cavs, yet he hasn't put pen to paper. What's up with that?
I think that he wants money, and the Cavs don't have much of it. He'll end up there, though. I mean, he knows it's the best for him. He sees what happens when he wins a championship. He's kind of, you know, gone through that this summer, what it's like to be on top of the world. I think that's most important to him. Obviously, he gets his money, but they'll come to agreement. I saw some rumors that the Sixers were interested in him, but I can't imagine him going there and just kind of toying away. And as one of the Sixers do have some talent going into this year. Maybe, you know, they're a year or two away from doing something, but I don't see him leaving the Cavs.
If the Sixers actually become good again, I'm not sure if the world will continue to revolve around this same axis. It's been so long. It would be stunning.
Business AI, pretty much.
It's, you know, their plan and their process is to get better, but it's just been so long stuck down there at the very bottom. Jordan, thank you, as always, for coming on Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling.
Thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate it.
And then, now that this podcast is done, the third podcast of the week will come Thursday at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific with Steve Hennessy, previewing the Ryder Cup once again. So this is a week of podcasts. Thanks to Jordan. Thanks to all of you. Have a great night, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling.